Today, we stand at the edge of a new dawn. Artificial intelligence is the most profound shift since the Industrial Revolution. It is rewriting the rulebook of our existence.
Artificial intelligence compute coming online appears to be increasing by a factor of 10 every 6 months. Like, obviously that cannot continue at such a high rate for forever, or it will exceed the mass of the universe, but I've never seen anything like it. Chip rush is bigger than any gold rush that has ever existed. Would I rather be alive to see the AI apocalypse or not? I'm like, I guess I'd like to see it.
LLMs, I mean, they do remarkable things. Every 6 months, it's completely revolutionary. And as I said, I think it's the biggest advance since written language, which happened 5,000 years ago.
The world had like a 2-week freak out with GPT-4, right? This changes everything. AGI is coming tomorrow. There are no jobs by the end of the year. And now people are like, why is it so slow? I believe that someday we will make something that qualifies as an AGI by whatever fuzzy definition you want. The world will have a 2-week freak out. And then people will go on with their lives.
ChatGPT can pass a GLUE Level 3 programmer exam, and it will run pretty much on a MacBook or a phone.
And that's this year?
This year, right now.
Yeah.
There are no programmers in 5 years.
What this does, really, is create the draft. But the draft has to be read by somebody, has to be edited by somebody, approved by somebody. It's just that the throughput, maybe, will improve, right? So it's the same thing in software coding. When we introduce GitHub Copilot, what did it do to software developers? It removed the drudgery of software development and made it more enjoyable. And of course, it'll also bring more software developers into the fold. I think that'll be the case even in all these other fields, right? So I think that some of the work that we do today will be helped with these draft creations.
This isn't just change. It's a revolution. In our hands, AI is reshaping how we do business, how we connect, how we create. It's our mirror, showing us not just who we are, but who we can be. With this power comes a challenge. The world is moving fast. Adapt or be left behind. Today, we don't just talk about AI's future. We step into it, ready to learn, to evolve, to excel. This is our time to be inspired, to rise. Let's write the future together. Welcome to Humanity Unchained, a show about the future of life reshaped by artificial intelligence. From practical insights on upskilling to existential talks about immortality, no topic is off limits. Welcome to the future with your hosts, Julia McCoy and Jeff Joyce.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to Humanity Unchained. This is episode technically 13 of what is now rebranded from Future Tense to Humanity Unchained. And I have my co-host here. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, hey, I am Julia, the person who makes AI look good, just like Jeff is the person that does AI. How do you like that, Jeff?
Perfect. Yep, really great. So yeah, like I said, this is episode technically 13 of this series. And Julia, do you want to go ahead and break down why we're making this change?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, well, as you know, if you've been listening to Future Tense for any period of time, and by the way, if that's you, amazing. We're so glad that you're here with us on this journey of this podcast. And the story of that podcast came after all of last year when I was looking for a podcast. Jeff was as well. And we literally couldn't find anything we both enjoyed that was educational, informative, and entertaining, because you don't want to sit there and listen to some dry tech geek drone on for hours. I mean, if you do, kudos to you. That's not something I will ever enjoy. I will just tune out and go to sleep. So we couldn't find the show that we wanted. So we went ahead and started it. And that's how Future Tense came to be this January. Also this year, as you all know, Jeff and I work at Content Scale, the world's best SEO writer, the world's best SEO AI writer. We're building something incredible. We get to be a part of something truly innovative because the founder behind this technology was the person who basically invented undetectable content. It wasn't a thing. So he launched this shortly after ChatGPT came out, was the first to market with that term. And now that term, undetectable content, AI detector, AI detection, AI checker, and all versions of that keyword have more than 4 million searches a month. So it it is a huge marketplace need. So we get to work in that full time every single day. That is the life that Jeff and I have. We're total nerds. We're obsessed with this. So we get to speak to you from a place of actually working in AI and seeing firsthand what it's doing for thousands and thousands of users. Now, we also get to work with a very visionary founder and development team. So in R&D, they're uncovering things that we get to be a part of as well. Things that go beyond just content. So can't really share too much more than that, but watch us this year and see what happens. That's all I'm going to tell you. So this podcast is kind of our runway to create a bigger space for more conversations. And the reason we're going from future tense, which is now past tense, you like my grammar joke. So we're going from that to Humanity Unchained because future tense no longer really encapsulated for us the bigger conversation. And as we recorded 13 episodes of Future Tense, we really started to see that we have a clear perspective we want to bring you. And that perspective is not something you will typically find in the news. You won't typically find this in the movies. You won't find it mainstream at all. And that perspective is that we get to do more meaningful work if we put AI to work for us. And we don't become basically enslaved to the machine. We become the master of the machine. So we have a very specific perspective. And Humanity Unchained represented that perspective better because that is what we want to do. We want to show you that humanity can actually live an unchained life. Like quite literally, you can step away from your desk. You can have more freedom when you put AI to use in the right aspects of your business. So that said, future tense just didn't make sense for us anymore. There was also some branding plays we were having trouble with. And if you know anything about Jeff and I, you know that we're good marketers. That comes first. So if we can't corner a brand, we're off creating a new one. So that's what we did. And if you YouTube search future tense, we cannot outrank what are a ton of grammar channels. So literally a few weeks ago, I had somebody YouTubing searching on YouTube our keyword for our show, and they couldn't find us anywhere. Like, so this is a problem. So here we are cornering what is a better podcast name that will encapsulate the bigger conversations. And the last note I'll share on that is, you know, there's so many channels you can turn to for news. There's people that cover, like Matt Wolf does a great job at this. Wes Roth, they cover that news the minute it hits, and they're creating content and they're bringing that news to you. And what we want to do is something different. We don't just want to bring you the news that's happening. Yes, we'll do that. We will bring to your awareness the most important things that we think you should know about, things that have taken us hours to distill and learn ourselves and see what's going on and investigate so we can bring this to you in the best manner, the clearest way, so you instantly get what's going on in the AI market because it's huge. And every single week, there's a major advancement and you need to know about it. But besides that, we also want to go into the future. And that's what this podcast will really do, is allow us to go there, where we get to talk about what will life look like in 5 years? What will we all be doing? Where will we be working? What will the outside world look like? What will life, what will cities, what will government entail? Because AI will change everything, and it will change life. It will change government. It will change how we work, how we live, everything. So that is the bigger conversation we're bringing to you in a better format. We're also going to have some amazing guests throughout this year joining us on this show. We're very excited about that. Anything you'd add to that story, Jeff?
Absolutely. So we've already recorded one of these episodes that we have not released yet. And I just wanted to quickly tease that. We had some amazing guests. We contact her live. We launched it in front of a live audience, and it was amazing. We had people like Matt Wolf, Jeff J. Hunter on there, Mark DeGrasse, some surprise guests in there as well. It was amazing. So make sure you stay tuned for that. It'll probably be a couple weeks before we release that episode. We definitely want to do some prior marketing for that episode. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a really good direction for us to go in. I think we have, like you said, really good insights and things that we could talk about being involved in the AI space. And I'm just so excited for people to see that I want to say inaugural episode. I don't know what to call it. It's just like we launched it. We didn't. It wasn't live, but you're going to get to see the awesome time that we had with everybody on stage. It was great.
Yes, that's a great point to raise, Jeff. We're coming off of the back of an amazing week. It's March 19th. Last week, March 12th through the 14th, we were in Austin, Texas. Jeff and I now live in Scottsdale, Arizona, to be close to the founder and work in person on what we're doing this year. But last week, I returned back to my old haunt, Austin, Texas, and we hosted our first conference. Lots of lessons learned. If you follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, you saw me post the lessons learned, including like profit and major lessons about people that have large followings and if that actually converts or not. So go check that post out. It's on my LinkedIn and Facebook if you follow me there. But what we did, what we were able to do at this conference was pretty awesome. Towards the end of the last day on Wednesday, we changed up the events a little bit. And we were like, you know what? We got Humanity Unchained. We know it's about to launch. We know we're doing this. We're all in. Why don't we just launch it here on stage with these amazing people we have in the room? And like Jeff said, we had some people who were real experts. We had Matt Wolf there. And so we gathered these people, put them on stage, and we interviewed them. And we basically just told them, go to any links you want to. There are no limits. And be as crazy as you want. Talk about AI and have the conversations you've never had. So we were able to do that. And if you're looking at my screen, I'm sharing some photos from that last panel we had towards the end of day Wednesday. And it was just amazing. I mean, this picture we're looking at right now, Jeff, I was basically unseated as the host of my own show. Somebody else took the mic and they were the host. Jordash, you're awesome. If anyone wants to be my host instead of me, it's Jordash. I will give him that seat. But one thing that also occurred, Jeff, is I couldn't believe how crazy these conversations got between these people, people that have been studying and working in AI for over a year now. Like, it's their full-time thing. Mark DeGrasse actually left working as the president of Digital Marketer to go full-time into AI consulting. And he's more than booked out, making more money than he was in his previous job just a couple months in. Incredible. So we saw some crazy rabbit trails. At one point, you know, I had to lean over to my good friend, Jeff J. Hunter, and tell him, that's enough, Jeff. You're way off topic.
That was so good, though, because we're able to have these conversations that normally people just don't have about AI. Like, yeah, most of the time, it's just like, okay, well, you know, there was a release that, you know, that happened with, you know, GPT-4, and it's like, okay, those are fine. Or maybe we talk about AI ethics, but the bigger existential questions that don't get answered are what we were trying to explore. And they perfectly encapsulated that. All of these experts in their various fields and what their thoughts and feelings are on AI, it was a beautiful moment and conversations that we had with everybody kind of chipping in to answer these like big questions that we just don't see people talking about. So that's what this podcast is for. It's like to have these really good conversations. What does this mean for you? What is the deeper meaning? And this new direction is definitely going to be something that you are going to enjoy going through with us as we explore these topics.
Yes. Well said. You know, if you've watched any of my recent YouTube content, I've leaned into AI, but not just like, oh, let's talk about AI. I've leaned into how to actually see AI, because there is such a false perception out there, and it's pushed by the Crisis News Network because, you know, they make more money when the news is negative, more people tune in. So whenever that is what we're being fed and we're only seeing the negative side of AI, we miss something particularly extraordinary, which is the life that we can have if we put AI to work for us. And that's what we want to bring you on Humanity Unchained. So you guys better tune in, whether it's, it might get very, very positive. You have to tune in. Good morning. We will get very positive.
So, oh, yeah, we'll probably have some controversial aspects to it.
Yeah. Exactly. If that first episode live on stage is any indicator.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, Jeff. So that said, let's go into our format, which is kind of We're going to bring you a format of what's the most important thing you should know from the past 7 to 10 days in AI. And on top of that, we're going to go into one existential topic. So we're going to do that every week. We'll bring that to you. Some weeks we will have guests. So Jeff, I'll let you kick us off with some AI news. And if you bat it right back to me, that's fine.
Well, yeah, I can go straight into the Sam Altman stuff because I definitely want to talk about that. I'm excited. So Lex Fridman, actually, I just pull up the video, have it playing in the background while I talk about this. Copy. Okay. Mute the audio so that way I'm not confusing everybody. Okay, you should be able to see.
Yep.
Awesome. So I'll just have this playing in the background on mute. So Lex Fridman had an interview with Sam Altman. Obviously, Sam Altman is the founder, CEO of OpenAI. And some things that he covered in here, we've all been expecting GPT-5 to release this year. One thing that Sam said is that we can probably expect GPT-5 not to release this year. And the reason being is because there is plenty of other more important releases that they see that they want to get out this year than GPT-5. Now, to me, GPT-5 would probably be the most important release, which tells me something, that they're being cautious about GPT-5 and its release. Another thing that Sam said is that GPT-4's release and what GPT-4 is lackluster. Now, these are specific comments from him. If GPT-4 is lackluster, and that, in his opinion, isn't that much of an improvement, 3.5, that gives you kind of indication of what GPT-5 can and will entail. And during the course of this interview, he started saying things like, and by the way, before that, this interview with Sam Altman, post all the drama that he had with being ousted from the company, joining back up, was a very interesting, like, look at his personality post all of that trauma. Like, you get to see a more confident, more like thoughtful conversation with him, Lex Fridman, that I haven't seen before. It was very, I don't want to say guarded, but just like lessons learned. Like, he's very weathered from that whole experience that he went through. But yeah, you can totally see that the GPT-5 release is definitely going to be something that's more impactful than GPT-4. And some of the things that he said is that the capabilities of GPT-5 are way more advanced across the board. It's not like they're improving one area. It's that everything across the board is improving. Now, also during this interview, he talked about things like QStar, which he's not ready to talk about right now, but he did confirm that QStar is a thing. And QStar is advanced style of reasoning. So we can kind of see that is a project that they're working on, but I mean, who knows when that'll happen. That may be one of the releases this year. We don't know. And so another thing that I want to talk about that he was actually mentioning on this podcast was the goal in the future is to have trillions of tokens of memory. So if you don't know what tokens are essentially, it's a form of currency whenever you're using an AI. You have output tokens, which is a certain allotment that you're allowed to output, and then you have research tokens that are what it's basically intaking to then create knowledge and context with an output for you. So what he's saying is that the goal would be to have trillions of these input tokens, these research tokens, and have your entire life mapped out via research. So it would understand everything about you and have it in working memory to then be an optimal assistant for you. And I think that's amazing. But then that opens up the question of privacy. And Julia, this is where I want to kick it over to you. When you think about something like that, where we have an AI system analyzing every email that, you know, that gets sent to you, that you write, every conversation that you have, you know, everything like optical that's within your environment, whether you're wearing glasses to intake the information, whether you have cameras set up in certain locations, understanding where you are, your text messages received, the calls you take, the interactions you have with your family. If it's able to intake and ingest all that information, have it work in memory, how do you view that? And do you have concerns about privacy there?
Well, I think that privacy is an illusion. I think if we think that we have privacy, unless you are a native living in a remote country where there are no computers, you do not have privacy. And that's just the sad fact of the matter. So, you know, I got the new Apple Watch, just bought this a weekend ago, and it's pretty incredible what the new model can do. It can tell me whenever I'm on my bicycle riding that it senses that I'm pedaling a bike and would I like to start a workout. And all I have to do is say, yes, that's it. And then it's tracking the whole workout, telling me how many calories I burned, telling me if my exercise ring is complete. It knows when I stop pedaling. But just the advancement of how good this watch has gotten. When I look into why, it's a little terrifying. My husband's like, I would never buy that thing. I don't know why you have it on your watch, why it's on your wrist. I'm like, it makes life easy. But the amount of cameras that are actually watching us from these devices now, the amount of tracking done on every single bit of our behavior, whether it's we're breathing faster, our eyes are moving in a different direction, whatever it is we're looking at, everything is being tracked. And the more advanced the technology we wear, we drive, we use, the more we are being tracked. So I think it's just a question of how do you want to live your life at this point versus do I want to have my privacy intact? Because let's face it, privacy is an illusion. It really is if you're living in America in 2024. So knowing that we're almost always being tracked, I think the question is like, where are your personal limits? And that's for me where I would like my life to be set up in a way where efficiency is my priority. And so everything kind of bends around that. And then this is a very simplified way of looking at things, maybe a bit naive. I don't think so. I just think it's how I view life. But I ask myself, am I doing anything illegal? If I am not, good to go.
The GPT like 7 or whatever it is, that has a trillion tokens. It's just like, man, Julia does a lot of illegal stuff. Julia, do you feel like doing something illegal today? I'm your AI assistant. I can help you out. You know, it's trained on your personal data.
Remember that time you stole that candy from the store, from the bulk goods aisle?
So I almost became a flight risk during one of these conferences. We're at Digital Marketer and they have these like trays of stuff like where food and they set it in front of you. And I was eating it and they had a napkin with all your utensils in it. And I had a knife, a butter knife, a spoon and a fork in there. And I opened it up and I used a spoon, I used a fork, but I set the butter knife in front of me and it slid out and slid into my backpack. And I'm just imagining AI recapturing that experience of me going through TSA and then being like, sir, you can't bring this on the plane with you. I'm like, it's a butter knife, but yeah, you can just throw it away. I don't even know why it's in there. It slid in by accident. I'm sorry. But to your point, I don't think that one, this is something, and it's something that Sam Altman says, is that it should be opt-in, right? I think anything time for privacy, there's certain people and certain individuals that are going to prefer a certain type of privacy or a certain level of privacy. And I think you should be able to opt out of stuff like that. But for me personally, I want that Jarvis, you know, in my glasses, you know, giving me a rundown of everything, and optimizing and really keeping track of everything from health to appointments to emails and all that stuff to where it is that perfect assistant. And I think we will see that.
Oh, no, go ahead. We will see that. Where was that thought going?
No, I'm saying that's it. We will see that. I think it's in our near future. But I think we're going to start seeing more of these AI assisted agents that are actually part of your daily life. And once we get at that, we won't want to go back to anything else.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that we have to think about something we said at the beginning of this podcast. Are you going to let AI master you, or are you going to become a master of it? And if we are the ones wearing the technology, using the technology, harnessing the robots, then we are the masters of it. It's that simple. Versus letting it master us, meaning we refuse to adapt. We refuse to open up Consonant Scale and use it for blogging instead of blogging humanly. ContonantScale.ai. So if we refuse to adapt, and we're doing things humanly because we think that that's a better route, then we are going to become enslaved to the machines. It's just a matter of time because they can do it better, faster, more efficiently. But if we're asking ourselves, how can we use AI to do better, faster work, then we are the masters of the machine. And something to your point, I wanted to bring up before we go into the one of the biggest breaking news headlines, which is the NVIDIA conference, that the keynote that Jensen Huang gave yesterday, Monday, March 18th, which is massive, massive, like a revolutionary breakthrough in computing as we know it occurred. But before we go there, I want to share really quick, because this is super relevant to what we're talking about, what's going on in the humanoid space. So there is a company called Figure One that has backing from Microsoft, Bezos, OpenAI. They just partnered actually with OpenAI to power the communication system, the brain of their walking humanoid. So this is a humanoid. It's about 5'7". It can last 8 hours on a charge, almost, you know, a majority of, let's say, a working shift, like 9 to 5. And it's built for mass commercial use. It's built to actually address labor shortages. And they say, take workers out of unsafe jobs. So it is the world's first commercially viable autonomous humanoid robot. You're looking at my screen. You're looking at it. I mean, it is so sleek and cool looking. And it's modeled after the human form, obviously. It also kind of looks a little Terminator-ish, which I think is cool. But you know, at Content Hacker Live, there was... an attendee there, Heather, I believe her name was, who brought her husband. And she's like, you know, I don't know how relevant this is to him. You're talking about AI in content and marketing, LLMs, but you know, how does this affect him? He's a contractor. He works in a service-based industry where you're on your feet doing things. And I was like, humanoids. And she was like, what? But basically what we're seeing on the physical side of this is extraordinary. And we're seeing multiple companies like Figure and its new model, Figure 01, is just one. And they had a massive breakthrough by partnering with OpenAI and becoming the first commercially viable mass market use. I mean, Jeff, you imagine, you know, walking into a grocery store, how many people are there working on the floor? Can you imagine that grocery chain turns to these humanoids, orders like 50 of them, they can replace an entire floor of workers in a day and potentially get better results, better work. If you watch this video, it's funny to see what the humanoid does. You know, it knows the difference between food and trash. It hands the food to the human and it has a response when the human's like, well, why didn't you pass the trash? It's very intelligent, in other words.
I love the
Jeff,
fact
that I know that you want to comment on this.
Yeah, I love the fact that when he puts the trash in and moves it forward, he kind of just like nudges it towards the guy. It's like, hey, here's your trash. Take it. It's so funny. It's just like the little quips. Like I thought it was interesting to see an AI assisted robot do that. It was funny.
Yes. I mean, it's incredible to me that OpenAI, ChatGPT launch, and now we're seeing basically ChatGPT in walking, talking form with the ability to last an 8-hour day and do all of these tasks, you know, powered by ChatGPT. Like that is just, that blows my mind. And it also brings into perspective something that Elon Musk predicted last November, actually. I thought he said this recently. He actually said this last November. Elon Musk said this at the UK AI Safety Summit in November. He said that, you know, we're going to see a new system. And if you've read or studied anything about this, it's a rabbit hole. Basically, there's this idea by a lot of smart people, physicists, MIT researchers, entrepreneurs, people that back new technologies, that invest in them. And it's this idea of an age of abundance. And I'm telling you, if you study this, it is incredible, because this age of abundance is fueled by what we are seeing right now. It's fueled by the breakthroughs in technology. That's how we're going to live in this age of abundance, where humans actually get freed up to do meaningful work. We don't live in an income-based society. So when you think about all of that, you look at all of that, which Elon Musk has done. He's also in constant conversations with the people that know what abundance looks like. So something Elon Musk said, that he said this: there will come a point where no job is needed. You can have a job if you want to. Maybe it's for personal satisfaction, or you just want to have a job. But the AI will be able to do everything. And he talked about something called a protopian AI-driven future. So like pro AI with this utopia. And that also brings into play something, I don't know if you guys have read this or seen this at all, but over on Medium, I share what is my wildest thoughts. Like if you look at back at my Medium profile, you will see articles that I do not share on company blogs, okay? Because I don't want these companies ever in trouble for endorsing Julia's wildest thoughts. Okay, so there's this article I wrote called "The Most Optimistic View of AI You'll Ever Read." And it goes into how the future is way more crazy, but also way better than what you think. And what the media tells us. So if you want to see like the potential of how crazy life gets, go look up medium.com, Julia McCoy, and read this story. Let's see what it's called. If you're not looking at my screen and you're an audio listener, it's called "The Most Optimistic View of AI, AGI You'll Ever Read, But Also a Call to Arms." So that is a look. I guess we went existential there. Sorry, Jeff, that was going to be for the second half. But that ties into everything you were saying about what Sam Altman said, because there's so much at stake here. It's not just LLMs. It's not just ChatGPT. It's not just, oh, we can use a prompt to generate copy for marketing. It's just, it's going so far beyond that. It's going to touch every industry. And like Elon Musk said, there's going to be a point in time coming very soon where we will not need to have a job, because AI can do every job equally, if not better than us. And that is wild. So I'll hand it back to you for our next headline.
Yeah, I just want to quickly add to that just really quick. One of the things that I actually said during one of the panels that we had at Contactor Live was that your goal for 2024 should be to replace yourself. What I mean by that is every single thing that you do, whether it's in business, whether it's like, I mean, obviously, like there's more personal aspects of it, of like relationships like that. You're not going to replace yourself in that. But in business, making money, things like that, you should be aiming to replace yourself this year. You should be looking at technology and looking at these tools and what you can do to then completely remove yourself from that in order for you to look at the higher level of that and be a higher level operator based off of everything that you do. Because that opens up and frees you towards these like larger goals that, you know, you wouldn't have had the opportunity or luxury of doing otherwise. So for 2024, that should be your absolute goal, because when 2025 hits, you can bet that your competitors or other people in the industry will have mastered that aspect of it, and they'll outpace you. Like it'll just be, 2025 is the year of outpacing. I'm already seeing that. So going into the next one, it looks like we have here the NVIDIA actually. So if we want to go ahead and get and talk about that, Julia, I'll toss it back over to you.
Yes. And I see we got Alex Rodriguez in our comments here, which is awesome. He was one of our panelists at ContentEcker Live, following the AI saga news very well, implementing it in his agency as well. So shout out to you, Alex. Yeah, he's like, are you going to talk about NVIDIA's Blackwell platform? So that was first on our list. And he definitely got off topic. But I don't think we can get off topic. I think it's all relevant. It's just where do we go first, right? Do we create that hook for you guys? So NVIDIA's Blackwell platform that's launching is definitely some of the biggest news in AI this week, probably potentially all month, although that could change tomorrow because everything that's happening is just massive. But this is one of the biggest ones. So NVIDIA is... it's pretty incredible to watch their rise. They have cornered the market of AI chips. It is because of NVIDIA's technology that we have ChatGPT. NVIDIA really spearheaded this new era that we are in called accelerated computing. So we have left general purpose computers in the dust, and we are now literally living in a new era. Well, that new era changed yet again on Monday. We're now in another new era of computing because, again, of NVIDIA. So what they announced on stage, and if you see the keynote at all, which I highly recommend, although it is 2 hours, I'll share that really quick here on screen so you can see. Jensen Huang goes pretty deep into their history and how they have been creating computers and really innovating computing as we know it since 1964 with the IBM S360. And they've been selling this technology to OpenAI. They've been bringing it on stage, Elon Musk, getting noticed by some of the biggest names in computing. And now here they are spearheading what is a new industrial revolution. And generative AI is the reason for this. It's putting the money back into computing that is now the result of that investment is now even better chips. So we are just seeing this snowball, right? To where you're not going to be able to stop this. It's going to get better and better. We're going to see computers get better and better. And it's just going to get pretty crazy. So let me go ahead and share this NVIDIA article talking about it on the NVIDIA company site. You can see they're talking about what is a trillion parameter scale AI model. Now, I was thinking, like, how do we put this in perspective? Because I think it's really easy to just get completely lost in this if you're like me, not really a technology geek. And this stuff just goes over your head. So something that I wanted to share with you, and let me pull it up to kind of put this into some wild perspective, is what's been occurring with neural nets. So our brains, let me go ahead and share an image. This is a visual of a brain, but I'll talk you through it if you're an audio listener. So neural nets is the name for networks that are modeled after the human brain. And what's crazy is that our brains are made up of 100 billion neurons with 100 trillion connections. So the human brain is an absolute miracle. It's a work of art, you know, and this is something that we haven't been able to replicate for years and years, but we have been trying. And I'm telling you, we are close. And that is the reason we're seeing computing get as incredible as it is today. That's the reason we're seeing NVIDIA launching what they launched yesterday. Because for the first time in history, if you see on screen, this biological neural network, this is what is in our brain. It's basically a digital network that is like one of the best descriptors of it. And so everything we see, everything we feel, everything we touch, everything we sense gets translated into data. And our brain is that data processing center. So what computer scientists have done, people like Jensen Huang, through technology, NVIDIA, they've recreated that neural network with computers. And let me read those numbers again to you that our brains are capable of. So our brains have 100 billion neurons, 100 billion with 100 trillion connections. And that controls everything, right? Like if we have to itch our foot or we have to think to respond to an email or we have to pick up a cup of coffee and we drink, there's just millions of minute little actions. And it's just a work of art if you think about it, right? Like this is the creation of God. And it's been hard to recreate because it is something that is so incredible and supernatural. So here we are with technology getting pretty close to replicating this. So some numbers to compare what is happening with computer neural networks. GPT-4 has 1 trillion parameters. Remember what our human brain has, 100 trillion connections. And those 100 trillion connections go into 100 billion neurons. So when you think about the technology progression, GPT-3 had 175 billion parameters. GPT-4 has 1 trillion. So we are leapfrogging forward in capabilities where we can literally recreate the human brain through technology. And it's pretty amazing if you look at like how the neural nets are built in computers, which is digital, of course, really can't. I mean, you can pick up the computer motherboard, but you can't really touch the data processing, just like in our brain. It's a signal, it's electricity. So if you put that side by side, pretty cool, right? The neural net replicates the brain. And that digital brain is a lot like our human brain. So if we go back to what Jensen Huang and NVIDIA launched, they're looking at large language models. So trillion parameter large language models that can run at a 25 times less cost and energy than what was formerly possible. So the H100 is the chip that has innovated a lot of what's possible with ChatGPT. So now it's going to be the Blackwell chip that can complete tasks 30 times faster and reduce cost and energy by 25%. So that was what was launched on stage at the keynote that NVIDIA had at their, let me see what the name of the conference was. I got so much data in my brain. My 100 billion neurons are not firing, Jeff.
This is why we need, you know, the 1 trillion token AI just to recall stuff for you. Like, I think you mean this.
This is what you really mean. Yeah, exactly. So the conference is the GTC, and that stands for GPT Technology Conference, or sorry, GPU Technology Conference. So literally, this is a conference just on GPUs, because that is how incredible and that is how powerful these chips are. Like when it comes down to it, the reason LLMs are so good, the reason we can use ChatGPT, the reason these things get better and better is because of these next generation chips that are built in a way to be able to handle what we see happening on the AI front. And so just to wrap that up, the Blackwell GPU, it has 208 billion transistors. Yeah. So if you're looking at my screen, this is an article from Barron's. And it can actually enable AI that can scale up to 10 trillion. So that is wild. We are getting really close. We're another 10x away, but we're getting really close to our brain's capabilities, which is 100 trillion connections. And for some perspective, you know, 50 years ago, I just heard this the other day, it blew my mind. The old computers, the early supercomputers, which NVIDIA was a part of building, it took over an hour to replicate 1 second of the human brain's functionality. So pretty crazy what we're seeing happen today, where we're getting very close to being able to run just masses of data. And you know, in the backside of all of this, kind of under the belly of the ocean, there's this thing called quantum computing that I don't think it's enough attention. And it's where computing will go from running on, however you say that dang word, transistors. I'm just going to say that. Where computing goes from running on that to running on atoms. And if we ever get there, we're going to leave our computers in the dust. Like what we're looking at, my laptop, my amazing MacBook Pro, which I love, customized this thing. It's a terabyte. This thing is going to look like a rock compared to what a quantum computer can do. It'll be, I think I heard, a million times more efficient. Should we add anything else to the conversation? And Alex, if you're watching as well, drop in the comments. I'm curious what you know about quantum computing. Jeff, over to you.
So one thing that I will say is that we're quickly approaching the end of Moore's Law. So yes. With exactly. Computer chips and how they're designed now, we're going to reach a point to where they can only get so small. And then once we hit that, like that's it. There is no progress there until we invent a new technology that can get us that next leap, where we have things like quantum, which is one viable aspect, but there's also a new design for some new chips. I don't have the source material with me, so I can't quote it directly, but there are new chips that are being designed that focus on light, in which that is another viable source for us to actually transfer information. That'll work really, really well. So people are quickly trying to come up with new ways of designing these computer chips that aren't just reliant on transistors. Mm-hmm. Because once we go to the quantum scale with transistors, I mean, where do we go from there? Like we're at the edge, you know? So it's amazing to see a company like NVIDIA like hit this milestone and be like, wow, like, can we go further? Like, how far are we away from that? Maybe that's a point where we actually reach AGI and it's like, oh, hey, well, you guys maxed out this. Let's try this and like build me this. That way we can, you know, go even further. And I'm worried that we're going to outpace the advancements. Like the advancements we have now are going to eventually stop if we do not get the technology after the hardware part. Right, like if we hit that maximum, I'm so worried that we're gonna see things like AI and AGI like kind of hit a stopping point or a hurdle that we need to wait like 10-15 years. I don't see that happening, especially this new chip, but I mean, hopefully not.
That's an interesting thought. I mean, there's some people I respect so much that don't believe we will see AGI at all, that believe it will take decades, and I'm like, really? You think so? I will name no names. But if that person's listening, you know who you are. So, but it's crazy.
That was another thing with the Sam Altman interview, is that the question was asked like of AGI. Like, is it here? And it's like, well, Sam Altman was like, no, it's not. And I think he's being honest. I don't think the AGI is here. And even when he's asked, like, if AGI was here, like, would you be concerned of it taking over or going crazy? And he's like, I think that we have bigger problems before we even start to think about that. Mm-hmm. And that just shows you that there's probably been breakthroughs, but I don't think that they have AGI yet. I think that he's way more focused on bigger issues within the AI industry and how it translates throughout all of the different countries and personal lives of everybody, that I don't think that AGI is necessarily like too close on the horizon where we can be like, AGI is here. And that actually leads me to another question that I wanted to ask you, which is, and this is also for anybody in the comments that's listening, or if you're an audio listener, I want you to think about this too. If AGI was handed to you on a laptop, what is the very first question you would ask it? And how would you know that it's AGI?
I would ask it, how do you know that you are AGI?
True.
Because I don't think we as humans can actually define AGI. I think it will have to be AGI itself that tells us what it is, because it will have data and capabilities so far beyond our imagination. You know, like our own human mind, we can't even write down or draw out a structure that represents these 100 billion neurons and 100 trillion connections. Like we can't even, it's, so if you think about AGI, which is beyond that, well, that's infinite. There's no way you can actually put your finger on that and define it accurately. It's going to have to tell us. And then I think the question I would ask it is a bit selfish, but I would like to know how to do this. How do I help our founder have a successful billion-dollar exit?
Yeah.
It's like the genie, right? So why wouldn't you use the genie to solve all your business questions?
Right. I'd probably ask it, do aliens exist and how do I find them? I think that's
bad use of the genie.
Well, I mean, would it, because I mean, they might have like more knowledge, more stuff, more experiences that I can then, you know, feed into the AI and be like, all of this knowledge, let's go.
I mean, it would know. It would absolutely know. Oh, we got a question from Alex. What do you think about Apple's talks with Google and their multimodal AI? Yep, MM1. Yeah, I've been studying that. Jeff, you want to go ahead and answer that first?
I have zero clue on this question. I did not hear anything about that, unfortunately.
What? I shared it in Slack yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I was out.
We just came home from a grueling conference that we hosted for 2 straight days. It was lots of fun. It wasn't grueling, but it was tiring. Yeah, I read this PDF, studied it. It's interesting because I think that Apple could have monopoly here, but I don't think that we're going to see the capabilities until we actually see it. And they're going to unveil it at their June conference. So it's kind of hard to predict, right? Because I think a lot of this is fairly speculative, a lot like the custom GPT store was, although I still think that is every bit as fantastic as it was marketed to be. I think there's a lot of inaccurate use of it. People think they can open up custom GPTs and instantly have expert marketing and copy and paste, and they'll have ROI on their campaigns. And then when they don't, they're like, what happened? So you still need to have awareness of how you use these things. But that said, the multimodal AI that Apple is building could really have a lot of promise just because of the capabilities Apple has had and the monopoly they've had in technology for years. I mean, all three of my devices, my phone, this watch I'm wearing that records like my every minute interaction with the world, a little scary, and my computer, it's all Apple. Like, the monopoly of their technology is for sure in my home. And they've done really well at that, creating this runway with multiple amazing products that just don't break. And that's why I use it, right? Like, Android has always frozen on me. Maybe I need to try the new Androids out there, but I don't want to switch because I know that Apple has this amazing track record in every product for being a stable, efficient product. So that's why I have a lot of hopes for that multimodal, but I think we won't know until we see more of it unveiled at the June conference.
It's really interesting that this is even a partnership, because if you think about it, that's Google has their own line of phones. They have Android operating system. So to have like iOS and stuff like that, and them collaborate is really, really interesting. I'm in the AI race for like assistants. I'm rooting for Google all the way. Like, I think that they have the work tools in place. I think that they have the ecosystem for work that's a little bit better than Apple's. Now, Apple's use cases for like the Apple Watch, like you're talking about headphones and, you know, the devices, I like Apple. Like, the ecosystem there is good. But I think for work, things like Google Drive, Google Calendar, Google Meet, all that stuff is really, really good. And it's all in one place. And so I'm very curious to see how they kind of work that partnership into play, because they don't want to alienate either as per like company's business model. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, Apple has their own versions of like these apps. They have, like, you know, the calendar inside of your app. They have calendar inside of Mac OS. You know, they have reminders and all these things. So it's like, how far does this go? I don't know. It creates more questions. I think that we do have to wait to see what is implemented with Gemini. But I would have liked to see Apple create their own AI. I think that the more businesses that we have really creating competition, we might see better innovation. And so I don't know how to feel about it yet.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to see like LLMs going to multimodal LLMs, where that could be, and that's what Apple was predicting in this paper. LLMs could be the next frontier in foundation models. And the interesting thing to me there as a user is like being able to feed a ChatGPT-like solution, whether it's Apple's or whoever builds this first and is successful, being able to use that MLLM, feed it an image and have it like break that down for me. Because like, you know, I just got this new adapter for my camera and I had no idea how to set it up. You know, I had to pick the brain of Jeff, who does AI, who thankfully served as a multimodal LLM for me.
Let's go.
Here's the adapter. Jeff, tell me how to use it. And he did, and every step worked. Until I have. Jeff 24/7 is the multimodal LLM. So I'm very much looking forward to that capability where I can feed it an image and it's going to tell me, it's going to break down that image, it's going to make inferences, it's going to be able to research the web for the best way to install whatever technology I need to install. And then, you know, the next step is having the multimodal LLM speak to a humanoid. And then the humanoid does all the work. And all I do is sit here and talk to Jeff.
Yeah, eventually you're going to see a robot, like, over here, either, like, walking by or, like, it's going to be over there in the kitchen, you know, making something, pulling laundry.
Listen,
battling it out with intruders.
As soon as I can convince Justin to give us some marketing budget, it's going to be humanoids. All day long. And you're going to see them. You're going to see them in our background. I will probably be in the kitchen so I can show this off. It will be basically the kitchen slave. That is, like, to me, the grandest use of AI is kitchen slave. Because I was doing dishes the other day. You know how many things I wanted to do instead?
I imagine a lot of things. What if that robot wants to do them those things too? You know? You never know if you ask it.
We have to be its master, Jeff.
You see, I'm aiming for a more like symbiotic relationship where we can all get along and have peace and harmony with the robots, because you never know what they're storing in that brain of theirs with all those transistors and neurons and neural nets. I mean, and if it has 1 trillion memory tokens, like, it's gonna know everything about you. So,
but I don't do anything illegal. We're good.
True. Start whenever you're prompting, start saying please, start, you know, thank you, you know, be nice to it.
But see, if we come from the fear-based perspective, then it might think, no, it might think that it has the power to enslave us, versus if we teach it early that we are not afraid of it and we make it our kitchen slave.
And this is actually, I don't want to go too deep into this part, but because we talked about it in the live recording that we did, and you'll see that in the future if you're listening to the audio or on YouTube, is that one of the points I made was that it's important to teach AI and have it learn empathy. That's a vital aspect of it. It's like how important that is, because it needs to be able to relate, and we need to create tribes with AI and with robotics and AI assisted robotics. All that needs to be a combination towards, like, it's one tribe. I mean, communicate effectively with it, and it can relate to us and understand why we're making these decisions that we make. Can I get a robot mouth? Sometimes this goes faster than this, so I just need like my brain to, like, you know, there needs to be some type of connection there. It's like AI assisted.
So you're saying 100 billion neurons are not enough for you, Jeff?
I mean, I'm at max right now with my mouth. Like, it's like I have too many neurons, and it's firing data to be translated out here, and this just does not work right. So hit me up, figure one, robotic mouth coming 2028.
Oh, but to your earlier point, you know, that's one reason I am rooting for Claude, because I see in Claude something pretty special. You know, the founders of Anthropic, which are ex-OpenAI people, what they're doing is they're building, like, this empathetic, understanding, agnostic LLM. And somebody actually asked Claude to create a government for the world, and, like, what it would do and what it would think of. And it asked it all these questions, and it basically said some really amazing answers where it put AI in the seat of basically being an aid to humankind, and how can it make the world better? And this person had a 2-hour prompting conversation with it, and it never went off the rails, and it stuck to that point of view. So I think, like, we need to study the makers behind these technologies, or the people that are putting together the parameters for these LLMs, cultivating them, and the founders and their intentions. Because the worst thing that could happen, that Elon Musk has actually pointed out, is that somebody with extinctionist philosophy gets into these LLMs and begins to program it to basically end humanity. Because if that was programmed into, let's say, Figaro One's brain, that's not good. That's Skynet on the streets all day long. So it's interesting to see this and to kind of follow the rise of which LLM is going to be the one that gets put into the robot's brain, you know, because I think that'll really matter to how beneficial AI works with humanity. So that's something I'm definitely studying, very interested in. And so far, like, Claude has been such a winner just in terms of seeing an LLM that has a sense of ethics and proprietary, or, you know, not proprietary. See, my 100 billion neurons are going out as well. Apparently I need a Neuralink. Not proprietary. There's another word I forget. that means the proper use of an AI that can sit with humanity and help us versus just going completely off the rails and taking over, which is, you know, a very real problem if we think about the governments and the militia that could get involved in autonomous AI.
Yeah, right now I feel like we're betting on the right AI solution to get to AGI. And with so many different competitors, the company or individual, I would say, that reaches AGI first really dominates and will corner the market to be able to, like, you know, do incredible things. So, like, fast and secure and ethically okay need to be all, like, considerations when going into creating AGI. And I think that if it's an arms race, honestly, like, we are in a new arms race when it comes to that kind of stuff. It's like, if a country that is, you know, hostile to us creates AGI first, and it's like, well, they have robots, you know, invading from the sky, you know, who knows what that future is. But, you know, we have a true and dire motivation to kind of crack that code first and create AGI first before anybody else.
Yeah. And it's interesting to follow, but it seems like that when AGI is here, we won't know. There was a prediction of that made in 2015. There's been a lot of predictions made by computer scientists. I'm reading a book called, or I'm reading Ray Kurzweil's book, The Singularity is Near. He's releasing another book this June called The Singularity is Nearer. So basically his point is that when the 2020s hit, humans will be far below computers. Computers will have superseded all of our weaknesses, and there's no telling when AGI will be here. Like, it's just going to be hard to predict. It'll be here suddenly. We may or may not know it, and then it will infiltrate every single model of AI as we know it. So I think that's very likely, I feel like, you know, like, let's say we discovered AGI. Do we want to tell the world? I wouldn't. I'd probably put that thing in a box, keep it for myself, or just hide it from the world, because I'm kind of terrified what would happen if that fell in the wrong hands. So I think that's an interesting perspective. And then we see Elon Musk taking OpenAI to court. I think he wants to know, do you have the genie in the bottle? I think that's his reason.
This is assuming that we can control AGI, that we can actually contain it. Because when you have AGI and you don't know that you have it, like, by that point, it's too late. That AGI spreads. And I mean, we've seen, like, this in science fiction, where it's like, you know, they create this like very intelligent system, and it replicates itself across the web and stores itself on all these computers and stuff like that. Like, we have some inclination, it's like some gut feeling in us that as a society that we're like, we need to be cautious about this. I think that most people are like, yeah, we need to be cautious. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you try to contain it, then there's a possibility of it either popping up somewhere else or somebody else creating something entirely different that's still AGI, because we can't properly define AGI, but it's still AGI, and it's a counter to whatever ethics or morality we have across the board, and that's a problem. But I think that would just be loud with it. I think I would just take it and be like, hey, this is the thing that we have. What do we do with this? Please help. Mm-hmm. Send people. Come on. Let's gather all the resources we have. How do we use this effectively right now? And how do we stop, you know, Armageddon? Like, how do we stop it?
And that's provided you get the right group of people around it.
Oh, yeah. But I think
they're like, oh, Jeff's got AGI. Oh, great. I'm going to use it to nuke the world. Hey, hello, Jeff. I'm a good person.
Yeah. And I think that it goes back to that training data. What are you training it on? What are you having it learn? Are you, you know, teaching ethics to it? Are you explaining the reasons why? Is it then reasoning in a way that you want it to reason? And if not, then that's not good.
Yeah. And that's why I've been super impressed with Claude. Like, you know, the people behind that model are really trying to create something that has ethics and a sense of ethics, which I think is really, really powerful. But guys, I know that we are over time, and I'm actually on a call here in a bit to lead a summit with 5,000 people next month, which I'm excited about. But I know that we have other topics. Jeff and I never have enough topic. We never have not enough. Ugh, wow. Neurons work. happened there. So we have so many topics to cover, and I'd love to know, you know, in the comments, if you're watching this live or the replay, audio listeners, go to the YouTube channel, drop us a comment. The YouTube channel is Humanity Unchained Podcast. If you type youtube.com/Humanity Unchained Podcast, you'll get straight there. But let us know, you know, how existential do you want us to get? Because one topic that I've actually been asked to cover yesterday, right after I got back from Constant Hacker Live, was, are you going to talk about souls and consciousness and sentience? And I was like, ooh, I would love to. So we'd like to go there, but we want to know, do you want to hear about that? So let us know on the YouTube channel, please, in the comments. Again, youtube.com/@Humanity Unchained Podcast. We'll get you straight there. And let us know if you want us to head into that zone, which I feel like is the twilight zone, but Jeff and I personally would love to go there. We just want to know if you do too. So let us know. Anything else you would add, Jeff?
Nope, that pretty much sums it up perfectly for me.
Amazing. Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this first episode of Humanity Unchained and the 13th episode of the rebranded Future Tense podcast, which is now Humanity Unchained, everywhere you listen to podcasts. We'd love it if you subscribe to our show. We're going to continue to cultivate the best conversations in AI for you. That's both news, what you really need to know, and talks about the future. How will humanity be impacted by the greatest change we've ever lived through? Because that's what we're living in right now with artificial intelligence. We're in the age of AI, and it's going to change everything, every industry. You know what Elon Musk said? We will not need to work as humans. That's pretty wild when you think about it. So we're going to go there, talk about all the topics, bring on expert guests, and the people that were at Constant Hacker Live, have them back on here to speak. We had some amazing panelists last week. So we hope you'll tune in and listen and let us know your feedback on the YouTube channel. We'd love to have you back here. That said, we'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.